Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents China's Law of the Sea, The New Rules of Maritime Order, by Isaac B. Carden, narrated by Chris Montero. Introduction. The Struggle for Maritime Order. Flying low at 5,000 feet, I could just make out some tiny spratly islands through the small windows of a cavernous Republic of China Air Force C-130 transport aircraft. Sitting in the cargo bay with a gaggle of international scholars and our Taiwanese official hosts, we were making our descent to Ituaba, Taiping Island. But my binoculars were trained on the nearly completed 10,000-foot airstrip on Subi Reef, some 35 nautical miles to the northwest, occupied by the People's Republic of China, PRC. Over the course of the preceding 3 years, 2013 to 2016, Subi had undergone a radical transformation from a forgettable tropical reef, fully submerged at high tide, to a modern military base studded with radars and other signals intelligence sensors, hangars for fighter and bomber aircraft, surface-to-air missile batteries, electronic warfare arrays, and hardened fuel and power facilities. The entire American naval base at Pearl Harbor could fit inside Subi's sparkling lagoon. The outpost at Subi is one of three major facilities built by the PRC, atop 3,200 acres of land reclaimed from dredged coral and sand in the southern reaches of the South China Sea, some 600 nautical miles from the Chinese mainland. Along with four other less developed features, these remote bases are the most concrete expressions of China's claims to own and administer all of the Spratly Islands, or Nansha Archipelago. The rest of the vast expanse of water is dotted with hundreds of small islets, atolls, sandbars, and reefs, maritime features, some garrisoned with Vietnamese, Malaysian, Philippine, and, at Ituaba, Taiwanese forces manning rudimentary facilities. The entire Spratly area has long been marked dangerous ground on international nautical charts because of the navigational hazards posed by its shallow reefs and quays. But it is the waters around them that pose the greatest danger. The danger lies not only in conflicting ideas about what the rules are and should be in these waters, but also in the practical actions and reactions to which these conflicting ideas give rise. The waters of the South China Sea, SCS, as well as those of the East China Sea, ECS, and Yellow Sea, are the object of a tangle of disputes over the rules of the international law of the sea. China disputes most of these waters with all its maritime neighbors and with the United States, U.S., and several other maritime states that contest the PRC's distinctive claims to rights and jurisdiction across the East Asian littoral. China's maritime disputes are fundamentally about the rules of the international law of the sea, much of which is codified in the Third United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, or the Convention. Beijing's efforts to prosecute its many maritime disputes are perhaps the clearest and most widely recognized case of the PRC's rising power and ambition coming into conflict with international order. Wielding substantial and growing maritime power, China has made clear in word and deed that the maritime order is a primary object of the nation's mission to actively take part in revising existing international rules and setting new rules, in the words of the PRC's top foreign affairs official, Yang Jiechi, director of the Chinese Communist Party, CCP, Central Committee Foreign Affairs Commission. Chinese leaders' express intention to revise and create international rules raises fundamental questions of geopolitics and international law. Who decides on the rules of international law? How are international laws interpreted and applied? And through what processes? Which rules are at stake, and what is their bearing on international order? If China intends to actively guide the direction of change in the international order, as Yang instructed the most recent authoritative gathering of China's central leadership at the CCP 19th National Party Congress, what are those actions, and what might the direction and magnitude of those changes be? This study sets out with the general aim to understand whether and how China is indeed changing international order. The sheer theoretical abstraction of that order, whether conceived as liberal, rules-based, post-war, or any other such formulation, inspires an analytical move to examine the concrete rules of international law. Such legal rules constitute a fundamental part of nearly all conceptions of order. At issue here is not whether China complies with the rules, however defined and interpreted. Rather, the object is to learn how the Chinese party state seeks to shape and use those rules, and to what practical effect. Through intensive focus on the treaty and customary rules of the international law of the sea, the book charts China's struggle to change international order in the maritime domain. The maritime order is a likely arena for observing a changing order because it is the site of China's most legally explicit and politically contentious challenge to the rules. In this domain, the relevant rules are unclose and customary international law, which comprise the basic elements of the maritime order. China's law of the sea, as conceived here, represents China's leaders' vision for those rules as advanced by the PRC through its actions on, under, and above the world's oceans, in its domestic maritime law and policy, and in the global diplomatic arena. That distinctive vision of maritime order is most evident, most controversial, and perhaps most consequential in China's maritime disputes. China's maritime disputes. Pointed conflicts over specific rules of international maritime law are the basic substance of China's maritime disputes. These are distinct from China's disputes over territorial sovereignty to the many islands, rocks, and other features scattered across the South China Sea and East China Sea, namely the Diaoyu Senkaku Islands, the Paracel Xisha Islands, the Pratas Dongsha Islands, the Macclesfield Zhongsha Bank, and the Spratly Nansha Islands. While territorial disputes over island sovereignty are more immediately accessible and tend to galvanize popular nationalism and media attention, they do not challenge the rules per se. The small, largely uninhabited islands have been disputed with varying levels of intensity since the 19th century. These quarrels resemble many other territorial disputes, in that they boil down to a disagreement on the facts, not the law. Who occupies the land? When and how was it occupied? And did anyone object? The proper objects of this study are instead the maritime disputes over which rules govern the ocean space associated with those islands. While the contested sovereignty of the islands is rightly regarded as the historical origin of maritime disputes, China's claims and actions deliberately and consistently sidestep the basic conflict of interest that inheres in opposing claims to sovereign title. Instead, China claims, "Sovereignty is ours. Shelve the disputes and pursue joint development," as former paramount leader Deng Xiaoping instructed his comrades. That formula has been applied by successive PRC leaders as the fundamental policy for all of Chinese island sovereignty disputes. When Deng issued that influential 12-character formula in 1978, he also told his Japanese counterpart, Prime Minister Takio Fukuda, that "we believe that it is wiser to avoid the issue of sovereignty if we cannot agree. Our generation is not smart enough. Our next generation will surely be smarter." Deng's prediction notwithstanding, the next generation, led by CCP General Secretary Xi Jinping, has sustained his policy line of setting aside the sovereignty question, at least in principle. Xi and other Chinese leaders have also dramatically augmented the attention and resources channeled into consolidating PRC authority over the vast blue territory, that is, the maritime space surrounding the islands. In pressing its claims, Beijing's priority on safeguarding rights has evidently come to outrank the desire for safeguarding stability. Xi's policy does not depart from the Dong-era guidance to shelve the sovereignty disputes, but it has brought about cumulatively more assertive measures to safeguard China's putative rights. While this approach has not precipitated large-scale conflict, it has also not led to any meaningful change to the status of island sovereignty disputes. Maritime jurisdiction and resource rights, by contrast, have been arenas of active and persistent contestation and change. China's conduct appears designed to remain below the threshold of active conflict, while consolidating its position in disputes. Hu Jintao and Xi Jinping have presided over extraordinary efforts to build and employ a capable civilian maritime law enforcement fleet and a sprawling bureaucratic enterprise to administer and manage ocean policy and law. They have nurtured the development of a People's Liberation Army Navy, PLAN, fleet that now contends with the U.S. Navy, USN, as the region's dominant naval force. Yet, even with this impressive capability, China has hardly limited its repertoire to gunboat diplomacy, in the form of the naval warships bristling with weaponry that are most commonly associated with such coercive maritime conduct. The PLAN has been a secondary or even tertiary player in the disputes, hovering over the horizon but seldom directly confronting opposing parties. Instead, Chinese practice is marked by the rapidly growing presence and activity of Chinese Coast Guard cutters, fishing and militia boats, oil rigs, survey ships, and marine scientific vehicles, all patrolling, administering, surveilling, exploiting, or studying disputed waters. These practices are directly enabled by the substantial new facilities at Subi, Fiery Cross, and Mischief Reefs, as well as the highly developed infrastructure on the Paracel Islands. Those distant bases and the activities they support do not advance a PRC sovereignty claim, for that claim has been plainly asserted and long recognized. Rather, they assert China's authority over maritime space. Through the practice of seeking to use and administer, and prevent others from using and administering, contested maritime space, Chinese official and quasi-official vessels strive to embody China's sovereign rights and jurisdiction with physical, practical presence. In parallel with these muscular efforts, Chinese officials also strenuously assert that these and other maritime activities are lawful under the international law of the sea. Underlying and enabling all of this activity is a more fundamental, if less immediately visible, tool of PRC maritime policy, the instrument of international law. Far from disregarding international law in its maritime disputes, as is often alleged, Beijing regards law as essential. Systematically, deliberately, and with growing sophistication, China's leaders seek to shape and use international law to their advantage. Operations on the water are undertaken expressly to advance China's definitions of the rules through actions portrayed as defending China's rights under international law. The basic object and purpose of the international law of the sea is to define the legal status of maritime space. Similarly, the basic object and purpose of PRC maritime law is to define the legal status of the maritime space claimed under PRC jurisdiction. Through painstaking official endeavors, Chinese officials have brought certain elements of the international law of the sea into PRC law. China's domestic rules mostly mirror those of the law of the sea, adopting the convention's basic structure of maritime zones of coastal state sovereign rights and jurisdiction. Those rules, in the form of national and provincial legislation, administrative regulations, departmental rules, and local measures, frequently borrow language from the UNCLOS treaty verbatim. In crucial areas, however, law of the sea rules internalized into China's system have been transformed in line with a clear political intent to assert the legality of controversial and sometimes indeterminate PRC claims. These transformed rules are of great interest, politically to Chinese leaders and analytically to this study. They run the gamut from specific technical matters covering where to draw baselines around offshore islands to legalistic parsing of the actions and vessels that may qualify for marine scientific research, to raw political determinations weighing the importance of the interests involved to the parties. With respect to each disputed rule, Chinese officials defined their practices in terms of China's law of the sea, that is, framed in explicitly legal terms implemented by domestic agents empowered by a domestic legal code that purports to uphold the law of the sea, but in service of the party state's maritime objectives. Who makes the rules? Asking whether China is breaking the rules does not leave us in much suspense when it comes to the international law of the sea. Like the positions taken by many other states, quite a few PRC claims and practices are unmistakably at odds with the black letters of UNCLOS. The more consequential questions concern whether and how China is making the rules. China's practice of certain law of the sea rules may change the maritime order and international order more broadly. Such changes may be more or less destabilizing. In the next chapter, we will consider the subject of order, detailing how it may change and to what effect. As a preliminary matter, though, the basic issues under inquiry have to do with how states may make or change rules of international law. This study's primary aim is to analyze China's practical efforts to influence an important body of international rules. Determining whether and how it has effectively done so requires close attention to the formal and informal processes by which law of the sea rules have changed. This rulemaking process is well underway, and it can be analyzed empirically, even if the final end state of those rules remains uncertain. Orienting around the rules of the law of the sea, this study is positioned to inform our answers to certain vital academic and policy questions about China's rise. The payoff comes in the form of concrete observations about what, precisely, China intends the rules to be and how effectively it has put those intentions into practice. While the full warp and woof of the China Challenge surely exceeds any specific domain of inquiry, there are significant reasons to regard China's influence on the law of the sea as a leading indicator of its putative challenge to order. In the law of the sea, as in several other important domains, China has straightforwardly announced an intention to change the rules. In the words of Wang Huikang, former Director General of the PRC Ministry of Foreign Affairs, MFA, Department of Treaty and Law, current chairman of the MFA's International Law Advisory Committee, and a member of the UN International Law Commission, ILC. With the ever-increasing improvement of our comprehensive national strength and influence, China is gradually transforming from a mere taker or follower of international law toward a participant and builder of international law. China has increasingly assumed the role of leader and shaper of international rules. The international community pays great attention to China's concept of international rule of law, and our participation in the game of international rules also needs to be guided by China's concept of international rule of law. The reform of the global governance system and the international order is accelerating, and the struggle for institutional power and the dominance of the future order has become the main battlefield of the game between major powers. China's ability to achieve dominance of the future order, in the words of the PRC MFA's leading international lawyer, thus hinges on the effective exercise of its power. China's explicit application of power to this game of international rules places the contest over making and shaping international law at the center of geopolitical competition with the United States and its allies. President Barack Obama warned that if the U.S. does not rise to the challenge, that void will be filled by China. They will make the rules, and those rules will not be to our advantage. Such overt concern about who makes the rules has grown palpably in successive American administrations, in interaction with a Chinese leadership that likewise views the matter in starkly competitive terms. In the first senior-level meetings between the Biden administration and their PRC counterparts, American officials objected to Chinese actions that threaten the rules-based order that maintains global stability. For Yang Jiechi and the party state he represents, the basic principles and composition of that order are an object of explicit competition. What China and the international community follow or uphold is the United Nations-centered international system and the international order underpinned by international law, not what is advocated by a small number of countries of the so-called rules-based international order. China's position on this issue of order and the rules composing it is plainly counterposed with that of the United States. However, this itself does not make it a challenge to order. Indeed, as Alistair Ian Johnston has argued, when we consider China's relationship to international order in comparison to America's, the matter of which state is the greater revisionist is debatable. Across a wide array of institutions and regimes, usually regarded as part of the international order, China's record of compliance and integration compares favorably to America's. This suggests that China is not challenging the so-called liberal international order as much as many people think, concludes Johnston. When we further consider China's present orientation toward international order in light of its past, avowedly revolutionary approach, there is a distinct trend toward moderation. Yet, even if China's foreign policy is less revolutionary than before, and perhaps less revisionist than America's, we are still left with the brute fact of its markedly enhanced power to influence the rules in the 21st century. A China that has only marginally revisionist aims but employs substantially greater power to achieve them is more capable of changing the rules than a China with revolutionary ambitions but relatively little power to realize them. The degree of challenge may vary across different domains of order, but for the United States in particular, contending with growing Chinese power entails a struggle to make the rules. We need not define international order as a function of American interest to recognize that direct conflicts between the U.S. and China over the meaning and application of rules offer a rare analytical window into the question, who makes the rules? The rules under contestation in China's maritime disputes raise this question quite starkly. The disputes highlight specific differences between China's preferred rules and those preferred by other parties. This circumstance allows the study that follows to adopt an altogether different tack than the normative question of who is right or the conventional academic question of who is complying with the rules. Instead, this book analyzes whether and how China is succeeding in its struggle to change the rules of the international law of the sea. Overview of the book. Chapter 1 develops a historical and theoretical framework for understanding the rules of the international law of the sea. It first conceptualizes rules of international law as fundamental building blocks of international order, however that order is characterized. It then reviews the primary sources of international law rules and custom and treaties, noting the processes by which these rules may formally change and situating them in the context of a specifically maritime order nested within international order. Turning then to the historical dynamics of change and stability in the law of the sea, it details the specific ways that its rules have changed over time. While the 1982 UNCLOS codified much of the law of the sea, the meaning and application of its black-letter rules have been subjects of continuous controversy and debate, making the law of the sea ripe for revision through the subsequent practice of states. These theoretical and historical considerations inform a practical method for observing and categorizing the ways China may effectively change or revise law of the sea rules. Changes may occur at the local, regional, and/or global level, and they may be observed in China's state practice in interaction with that of specially affected states. The rules under inquiry are those actively contested in China's maritime disputes. 1. Geographic rules. 2. Resource rules. 3. Navigation rules. And 4. Dispute resolution rules. Chapter 2 explores China's evolving attitudes toward international law, focusing on contemporary beliefs about the law of the sea and expectations for how China can change it. First, it summarizes both ideological and instrumental elements of this attitude toward the weapon of international law, since China's fateful encounters with British gunboats and European treaties in the first part of the 19th century. Tracing the legacy of this experience into the contemporary PRC, it then unpacks PRC participation in international legal processes and its role in the development of the 1982 UNCLOS Treaty. The chapter ends with an overview of the domestic maritime legal and administrative apparatus that has evolved to internalize the law of the sea in the PRC and promote the programmatic aim of becoming a maritime power. Chapter 3 analyzes the geographic rules of the law of the sea, which regulate the spatial extent of state authority in the maritime domain. The contested geographic rules in China's maritime disputes concern entitlements, baselines, and maritime boundaries. Chapter 3 first examines these rules as they manifest in PRC practice, that is, in its laws, regulations, official pronouncements, and administrative and law enforcement activities, to draw a preliminary conclusion about the consistency and uniformity with which the PRC promotes a particular interpretation or application of geographic rules. Then it analyzes the responses of the states most affected by China's practice. These specially affected states may object, acquiesce, or adopt China's preferred rule. The responses will determine whether that rule may be emerging as a legal norm in the region and beyond. Chapters 4 through 6 follow this same method of identifying the specific rules under contestation, evaluating China's practice for uniformity and consistency, and assessing the specially affected states' responses to determine whether China's preferred rule may have wider normative effects. Chapter 4 applies this method to resource rules, which assign rights and jurisdiction over marine resources. Chapter 5 treats navigation rules, which establish the rights and freedoms of flag states and the coastal states' authority to limit them in and above their claimed jurisdictional zones. Chapter 6 takes up dispute resolution rules, which determine how legal institutions may be brought to bear in settling differences over other rules and their application to specific cases. A concluding chapter synthesizes the practices analyzed throughout the study, recapping evidence that China has promoted the development of uneven regional norms that are unlikely to be effective as rules of international law. Based on the patterns of practice observed in the four contested sets of rules, the potential for China to change legal rules at a global or universal level is generally limited. However, there is accumulating evidence of an inchoate East Asian maritime order in which UNCLOS is not the only significant source of rules. The practice of China and many specially affected states shows a distinct trend toward deference to the supremacy of coastal state sovereignty, China's in particular, and toward weakened institutions for formal dispute resolution. Finally, by further widening the aperture to consider the cumulative effect of China's maritime practices on international order more broadly, the chapter considers whether China's law of the sea is more likely the exception or the rule in other domains of international politics. Chapter 1. Order, Rules, and Change in the Law of the Sea. The relations and interests of nations can only be coordinated through rules and institutions. You cannot just listen to whomever has the strongest fist. Great powers should take the lead as advocates and defenders of the international rule of law, keep their promises, refrain from exceptionalism, abjure double standards, and never distort international law to infringe on the legitimate rights and interests of other countries, nor undermine international peace and stability in the name of rule of law. But for unjust and unreasonable international rules and institutions, we will...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?